Ladies and gentlemen,
this is the one we've all been waiting for. It's good night, freaking Irene!
Let's get ready to rumble!
Time! And those had enough people, the fire truck out!
So, Matt Lucas, BKK back in the house. Let's get right into it. And we can streamline this whole process. We've talked before. So give us an idea who you are now. What do you got going on that, like, we hooked up with you from, actually, I met you through Sparky at Fairtex and kind of met you in passing. And then as giant as this world is, the martial arts world seems to be pretty small, because we spoke to your business partner at Nakmoy Legends, did an interview with him, and he said, hey, you should talk to my buddy, you know, my partner that does this stuff for us in Thailand. He, you know, he's got a lot of contacts there, and he gave me your name. I'm like, wait a minute, I already met him. And how that's so obscure that the world is that big and that small at the same time. So let's get right into, like, what are you doing? You have so much going on. So who is Matt? What do you got going on?
Yeah, so I have, like, a bunch of different projects that I do. So I live out here in Thailand. I live partially in Pattaya and then also in Bangkok. My long-term girlfriend is in Bangkok. And then I work at the Fairtex Training Center as a social media manager. So I take care of the Facebook, the Instagram, a lot of blogs and stuff like that. And then I also work at Max Muay Thai, where I am an English language commentator. I've been there for 4 years. And then I do some work with Muay Thaigram. I'm a partner in that, which is a large Instagram account. And I also work with Nakmoy Legends, and I do a bit of freelance writing and journalism on the side. So I'm someone asked me, like, what I do. Like, I'm a sports journalist, sort of content creator in the world of Muay Thai.
What do you do? I'm busy as hell.
I do it all, you know, basically. So, you know, I have a podcast I try and keep up with. I have to publish it, the first one, in 2 days. I'm trying to come out with an ebook. I have a regular Instagram account of my personal stuff that I update very regularly. And then on top of the Max and, you know, Fairtex and other things going on as well. So, yeah, I get around town.
Yeah. Your Instagram account is interesting. You seem to focus, like, more on, like, giving a little exposure to fighters that you come across over in Thailand.
Yeah. So I do. Yeah. It's mainly fighters here in Thailand, because I take the pictures myself. So it has to be someone that I know already or I've encountered a few times. And then so for the last year and a half, I've done a lot of portraits. It's basically like these baseball style stat cards with a quote and, you know, some basic biographical information on the fighter. So I've profiled, like, all sorts of people. Yatsen Klai, Adam Noy, who just fought, Gona, PK Sanchai, he's a pretty good stadium level fighter. Zidoff Akuma, who was in Contender, and then, like, you know, some not very well known people, like Bazooka Joe Stripling, who's an American fighter. This Julius Fu, he's an upcoming photographer. Super Bond T Dead 99. He's not, like, well known internationally, but he's very well known out here in Thailand. So I really try and do like a mix of, you know, oh, this person's famous and this is a nice shot, and then this is just like regular Joe Schmo, you know, in the Muay Thai world.
Yeah. And you get, I mean, you get exposed to so many fighters. I mean, even just me, when I was there training around, I got exposed to so many fighters. And you're actually, I mean, I've seen you, you know, with the Petney guys and, you know, gyms all over Bangkok and Fairtex. And you got a bunch of high level fighters coming out of Fairtex now. So yeah. you get exposure to a lot of amazing fighters.
Yeah, because of my different lines of work, you know, and just being out here long term, I know or have encountered a lot of different people repeatedly. So it's cool. It's, you know, I'm in the fight game.
Yeah, definitely. how about Stamp this weekend?
Yeah, she looked incredible. She trains very, very hard, and you know, her ground game was good. You know, I think she can take up, you know, dial it up in terms of opponents. But I think she has another bout coming up soon. It should be announced soon, and that will be an exciting one.
Is she focusing more on MMA now, or is she, I mean, she has the two other titles.
Yeah, she's focusing more on MMA, but she's still obligated to defend her kickboxing and Muay Thai titles. So, you know, this year she will probably have to do both.
That's pretty amazing. I mean, I met her a couple times and she's just so happy. Like, and then to be such an amazing fighter, and I think it would, for everyone, it would be amazing for her to be a three, you know, sport champion. I mean, that's just unheard of.
Yeah, I think, you know, like realistically, like I'm not sure it's possible. Just like, it's very, very difficult. You know, in terms of like being an athlete and getting these fights, and like, you know, it helps that she's young, but like,
yeah,
you know, it's so, so difficult. And then also she still has to defend her belts.
Right.
She's going after the MMA belt, and the MMA belt, you know, realistically should be like a bit of time away, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Cause she's only had like three pro MMA fights, or three or four, you know. It's like, yeah, I mean, she's done phenomenal and like, you know, is definitely a contender, but it's also like, it's just hard, you know?
And oh yeah. I mean, she wouldn't be able to hold all three.
Yeah.
Not on a level of, you know, I'm not sure exactly how one sets it up, but I mean, even as basic as the UFC, where you're typically defending, you know, three times a year, like that's nine championship fights in a year.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not sure that one's female division is not deep enough, I think, to be defending things like nine times a year, but
yeah,
you know, they are scheduled to have, I think, 50 events this year, like two a month.
Wow.
Which is an insane amount. So, you know, maybe she fights nine times. You know, I don't think she'll fight nine times this year, but, yeah, you know, she might fight six. And, you know, if all six fights are, you know, belt defenses, or, you know, just statistically speaking, that's going to be very, very difficult, because, you know, you're the champ, but, you know, you ate some bad sumtum before you fought. And, you know, the other person, like, had good ice cream. And
Yeah, definitely.
You know, these little things, when the small things, as you go higher and higher, make a bigger and bigger difference.
Yeah, and you're only fighting the top of, you know, the heap. It's not like you go, oh, well, this should be an easy fight. No, these are the people that are hungry, that, you know, deserve a shot at your belt. So, Yeah, it's good, but it's awesome to see her being successful and being such a good, fun character and a fun person, you know, compared to some of the sport champions that we have now, just in MMA in general, that kind of don't really embody what I would feel is like a good martial artist.
Yeah, I think like a lot of it has to do with, you know, cultural things. Just
Oh yeah,
the completely different culture, and so, you know, she's nice, she's relaxed, she's, you know, there's not like as big of a celebrity culture out here, so it's, you know, it's not as big of a deal.
Yeah, which is amazing. Like I tell people all the time, like you can go into a gym in Thailand and train with, you know, their most prestigious champion, like in the history of the sport, for less than $100.
Yeah.
And this person will give you like as much knowledge of theirs as they can at the time, and you're treated like with so much respect, and you're not just, you know, a couple bucks to get in there or anything like that. Like, you know, in the States, you know, most of our champions aren't even accessible.
Yeah.
Like you're not allowed in the gym at the same time that like a John Jones would be training.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, absolutely.
So, and when did, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, and I would say that's a little too bad.
It's horrible. And it gives our champions like that elite status, like their mentality too, where I think in Thailand it keeps them very humble.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So how did you get your start in martial arts in general?
Yeah, so when I was I dabbled a little in Muay Thai. I lived in Las Vegas. I went to Master Toddy's off and on. Then I moved to the Bay Area in like 2004 or something. And I started working at a restaurant pub. I didn't want to go to college. I didn't want a career. And I was like, I got to do something with myself. I went to a gym, a Muay Thai gym, Pacific Ring Sports, started working out. I was like, this is cool. I fought in a smoker. I was like, this is cool. Let's go to Thailand. I saved up money. I went to Thailand. I was like, I'd never been abroad before. I fought here in Pattaya at Teprasit Stadium in like 2005 or six. And then when I came back, I was like, this is cool. Like, I should just keep doing this and see where it takes me. Then I started writing for a website called My Muay Thai. I kept training and fighting. I came over, you know, I went back and forth. And 4 years ago, I moved to Thailand permanently.
And how you fought pretty regularly at that point after that first fight?
Yeah, I mean, I fought as regularly as I could in America. I had like 20 something fights, like smokers and amateur fights altogether. And then I fought a dozen times out here in Thailand. So a little, you know, a little bit, not a ton or anything.
Gotcha. And that's I mean, the experience is like no other out there. So
yeah, go ahead.
We all kind of, once you get into it in the States, it's like, it's that you have to get the Thailand thing. Like once mm-hmm. you fall in love with Muay Thai, you're like, I got to get to Thailand. And then how easy it is to get a fight in Thailand. And, you know, some people just, and most people just fall in love with it.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of amazing things about the sport.
So like I said before, is when I got reintroduced to you was with Nak Muay Legends. So what is your involvement kind of with what you do with them?
Yeah. So I am the community manager for them. That's my official title. So I do like a lot of the Instagram stuff. I'm also the point of contact for here in Thailand. So, for instance, you know, we recently went and saw Sagat Pet Indy, the original Sagat. I paid him money. We pay all of the athletes for their images and their likeness and their names attached to our t-shirts. So went there, gave them a bunch of money. We also recently signed Sanctinoise to our room role, the Deadly Kisser. So I went and met up with Sanctinoise and, you know, got the contract signed, handed the money over. Also got some content with him. That reminds me, I have to finish editing it. It's like sitting on my desktop. I made, we watched a few of his golden era fights. And he talked about them.
Oh, wow.
I just recorded the audio. So like one of his Ramon Deckers fights, we talked, like he basically provided commentary during the fight. And then like one on Johnsonon, he fought Johnsonon Fairtex, and also, his, fight against Cherry. Just like, you know, he like talks about the weight cutting, you know, the fight itself, what he was thinking about, all these sort of things.
And it's pretty cool because you're pretty fluent in Thai, right?
Yeah, my Thai is like basic intermediate. I can read pretty decent, but that also reminds me, I need to go back to language school.
That's something that I actually, like, I know a lot of people use it as a crutch to keep a visa, but that's something that I really want to get into when I do come back in July, is I want to get into a language school and really learn, just because of the interactions that I have with these amazing people, and they're trying to kind of appease me by speaking English, and I see them, you know, you see them speak Thai and it's so much more fluid and they're more comfortable. I'd like to be able to kind of interact with them on that level. Out of respect, you know?
Yeah.
And so when you go over and you see these legends, I mean, you get a whole different look because you can speak Thai, especially if you're doing something like a commentary. You can understand like the whole situation of these fights that are on the biggest level at that point. Like, what is it like to sit down with a guy that's had these fights and then just to be like, oh, this is how I was feeling when that happened?
I mean, it's pretty cool. You know, like I said before, it's like relatively normal, because there's not as much of a celebrity culture. You know, the other thing is like, I understand the context a lot of what was going on or what's happening. So it makes things cool, you know?
And that brings us into, you're very fluid in the grand scheme of the tradition of stadium fighting.
Mm-hmm.
And that is something that's so detached from the United States that we don't understand what's going on. So there's a couple things. First of all, when we talked the first time, you had some super interesting things on knowing your fight value.
Mm-hmm.
So like how if I came to you and I said I'm gonna fight, like what are the things that a fighter needs to consider as far as like what their value is, what their experience level should be, and things like that? I mean, you see it a lot.
Yeah, I mean, I think that most fighters will probably overvalue themselves, especially American fighters, and overvalue the situation they're in because they don't understand what level they're fighting. So a lot of fighters come in, like they're on traincations, like sports tourism vacations, and then they go fight at a Muay Thai entertainment show of some sort, and they beat their opponent, you know, it's a fight, they win, and then, but they don't understand that these are not high level fights, and it's reflected in the pay. So for instance, you know, if you're generally, but not always, if you're making less than 10,000 baht, for male fighters, there's a big wage inequality, that, you know, you should be noted. If you're making less than 10,000 baht for a fight, it's not really, you know, it's like a C-class fight, if that. You know, your 10 to 20 range is a lot of the Muay Thai entertainment shows. Those are like decent level sort of journeyman fights. And then like 20 upwards is, you know, you're doing okay. It also depends on the location too, because fights at the main stadiums like Raja Demnern in Bangkok don't pay as well. And it's also much harder to get paid well there. So a very good purse at Raja Demnern or Lumpini is like 20,000 baht, which is $600. And, you know, every time you win, okay, your purse increases like 1,000 or 2,000 baht. But every time you lose, your purse goes down.
Oh, wow.
So it's a very demanding performance-based salary. And then also, in order to be considered for the stadiums and to move up your salary and to be fighting good guys, you need to be fighting very, very regularly. So if you're fighting less than once every 4 to 6 weeks, you know, you're sort of irrelevant. You know, you come out to Thailand, you fight twice. Oh, maybe you get like a legit stadium fight, one legit stadium fight, and then you go home. Like, it's over. Like, you didn't have a career. You just had like this spurt.
Yeah, you're just kind of the experience.
Yeah, you just like got this sort of short-term tourist experience. You know, it's not always like that, but a lot of foreigners are not coming over and having long-term careers or experiences out here. And so they don't understand the context of the sport. They don't understand the salaries, and they don't understand how the game is played.
So how do you value, like, if I come over, say I had 3 fights in the States and I'm like, I'm going to go to Thailand, and I start training there, and I'm like, oh man, I can make, you know, 500 bucks in the States for a fighter. I mean, I'm guessing, but I'm saying, like, so how do I kind of understand what I should be getting paid by the amount of fights that I've had, my experience?
Yeah, I mean, most gyms and most places will have you do some sort of warm-up fight, especially if you are coming in for the first time. They will just like chuck you on a show, like a low-level show, and be like, oh, let's see what happens to the Falang, you know?
Yeah.
And they just throw you in with whatever. And, you know, they'll also be able to gauge your abilities by your training, your dedication, and then, you know, the fight performance itself. And then, you know, after that first fight, they'll be able to match you up more accordingly. So, like, for instance, if you are staying long-term in Thailand and you fight out at Max Muay Thai, you usually will fight on the daily show first, which is low wages. It's, you know, 3 to 5,000 baht. It's sort of a build up to the weekend shows that pay 10,000 baht and have more bonus opportunities. So there's sort of stepping stones and sort of building blocks for people. And that happens around the country.
And obviously, if you ended up in some rural areas, you're going to get paid a lot less.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, a lot of the upcountry fights in Isan, you know, you'd be lucky if you're, you know, making 1,000 or 3,000 baht.
Now, on top of that, a lot of people in the States don't realize that betting is a huge part of Muay Thai in Thailand. How does that affect a fighter's pay first? And then can you give kind of some insight on how the betting works?
Yeah, so I think, like, you know, a lot of people think the gambling has like this huge monumental impact on it, but it doesn't. The gambling is sort of primarily located up country, and then in Lumpini and Raja Demner and some of the main stadiums. But also there's the entertainment side of the sport that is fast growing, and that's not really based on gambling at all. So I think, you know, it's important to understand that the gambling plays a part in the game, but it's, you know, I think people will sometimes make it more exotic than it actually is. Can you repeat your question that way I can?
So, like,
I went off on a tangent.
No, I totally get it. I've been to Raja and Lumpini, and I sat in the betting section in Lumpini, and it was like it was a whole different experience. Sitting with just bettors, and the passion and the energy that they put out is it's crazy. And then you get, like, once you kind of acknowledge and you're not just at your first fight sitting in the VIP seats, and you kind of see everything that's going on, and you see people like with the hand signals and people on cell phones, and they're talking to people that are right at ringside, and you're like, wait a minute, what the hell is really going on here? And yeah, you kind of, you don't understand it. And then you're like, people start to explain, like, oh, that's the bettors and things like that. So I've seen like bonuses, like gold chain bonuses and things like that in the fights. And I've seen where they're like, okay, if you knock this guy out, you get a bonus, you know, some bookie or someone is offering, you know, a cash bonus at this point for you to finish it in this round and things like that. Like, can you expand on anything like that that is or is not true of what's going on?
Yeah, so I mean, some of this stuff is similar to the Western world, where, you know, you basically have bookies, same as like a Western boxing fight, and they set up odds for the fight in Vegas or whatever. And then there's live action odds with guys in the stands sort of updating websites and stuff with odds of the fight as it's happening. Then the fighters will occasionally get, it's called an ajit, which is a fuel injection or a cash injection for performances, good and bad. So for instance, someone will get a gold chain for a great performance, or, you know, winning a gambler a lot of money. The famous bout between Jongsonon Fairtex and Sakmonkol Sitchuchok, the elbow war, both fighters were getting gamblers coming to their corners, offering bonuses for winning the bout. So it really incentivized the fighters. So, you know, and then there's, you know, all this hand signals for the odds as well. And then, you know, you'll have Dern Pan, which is side bets between gyms. So, you know, the Matt Lucas gym versus the Chase gym. The Matt Lucas gym puts up 50,000 baht. The Chase gym puts up 50,000 baht. The winner gets, you know, the purse. So that will happen a lot, and it's a way of drawing attention. Usually the Dern Pan is crowdsourced from the people in the gym. So it's like, you know, your buddy Teddy will put in like 10,000 baht, then your mom, who, you know, thinks your fighter is amazing, will put in like, you know, 20,000 baht, and, you know, the other 20,000 baht will come from, you know, whoever's around. So that will happen sometimes.
And is that where the fights that would be like, oh, it's a million bot fight or whatever? Is that? Okay.
So what I think, let me look real quick. I recently saw a fight with a relatively large. Okay. So Prowl Prowl Pet Indy is fighting soon, on the 27th of this month.
My birthday.
Roger Demnern, and then it's a million baht Dern Pan, which is like a side bet. I forget who he's fighting.
So when that happens, obviously, like, the gym gets a cut. How much does the fighter actually get?
Well, it basically depends. You know, because the Dern Pan is all based on like the gamblers and that economy. And so, you know, some gamblers are going to be like, oh, you're amazing, and give you lots of money. And then some gamblers are going to be like, oh, I won money, I'm going to, like, you know, go buy more sticky rice or whatever. You know, like, and I don't know if there's like a, you know, it's obviously like custom to tip out the fighter, but I'm not sure, like, oh, you know, you always give like 15%.
I gotcha.
Oh, no, 15% is cheap. You have to give 20, you know. Oh, 18%, that's okay. I don't know.
When they say that it's a million baht fight, the fighters themselves aren't actually getting the million.
No. So it's usually 500,000 baht from one side and 500 from another.
Gotcha. Okay.
Which is still, you know, a pretty sizable amount of money. Like, 100,000 baht is, I think it might be $30,000 or, oh, no, a million baht is...
It's about 30,000, isn't it?
Yeah, it's $33,000. So that is a fuckload of sticky rice.
You can get a few mangoes with that.
Yeah, you can get more than a few mangoes and sticky rice with that. So, I mean, there's like a lot of money at stake, obviously, with these sort of things.
I remember watching, I don't remember which documentary it was recently, what they were, you know, one of the ones where they're kind of exposing that the kids fight. And they were talking about like the village put up money to bet against a young fighter or to be, you know, with, I think the kid was like 9, and they said the village put a whole bunch of money together and then he lost. And then, like, to see, like, the heartbreak on this kid's face that, like, he lost his poor village money. And it's, like, the pressure that they put some kids under is amazing.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, like, you know, part of it is people believe in the kid. Part of it is people want to make money. You know, and there's all sorts of different things that happen when money's on the line. You know, some good, some bad, obviously. I know from my personal experience, I put 3,000 baht on this fighter I was cornering, Nathan Ward, actually, who's from Brian Pope Joey's gym. Which is $100.
Yeah.
It's not like a ton of money, but $100 out here is like, you know, it's a decent amount of sticky rice.
Yeah.
So he was fighting and he was losing the first two rounds. And I was like, fuck, my fucking phone bill. Like, like, this is, oh God, if I lose this fucking money. Like, and so, like, I got like really agitated. And it started to impact the way I was sort of treating him. And then he turned it around. He like not knocked out the guy in the third or got a knockdown or something. And I was like, phew. And then I decided I wouldn't ever bet that much on a fighter again.
When you're betting, so when you bet, did you bet just with somebody in the stadium?
Yeah. I just bet with someone at the stadium. A lot of times you need a liaison of some sort. Like, I would not advise foreigners to try and gamble themselves. You need like a Thai guy to do it for you, basically.
Yeah.
And then usually it's even odds if you bet beforehand. So, like, you know, if I put 5,000 on Nathan, it's okay, 5,000 to win.
Right.
And that's just how it is. There are like varying odds as well, but you know, that's a bit too complicated.
Right, the odds vary through the rounds and everything, right?
Yeah, it varies between in the rounds and stuff, and then you know, it's its own language. So
yeah.
Even if you know Thai, you won't necessarily know and understand the language of gambling. So that's like what, you know, one of the reasons why I like would definitely not encourage foreigners to sort of fuck with gambling that much. And if you, especially like if you like put money down and then you don't pay.
Yeah.
You know, this is like it's business and it's serious, and it's like there's a lot of cultural things that are going on. And as a foreigner, you're a guest, and you're, you know, doing something like this is like a privilege, and it's really nice, and you need to pay, you know.
Well, that's what a lot of these people are making a living off of that.
Yeah.
And you can't exactly be fucking with somebody's living.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you just like can't fuck with people's money.
Yeah. Yeah, and like, Thailand, I mean, is amazing. And I, like I said, I've never, ever, ever had a problem with anyone in Thailand. Like, as far as people get nervous, is their criminal aspect. Of course, there's a criminal aspect in anywhere in the world. But I seriously, I've never had an issue with anyone. But I also conduct myself appropriately.
Yeah.
So, you know, I wouldn't go, yeah, you know, I remember I was sitting in, you know, the, like I said, in the betting section in Lumpini. And they would ask, you know, oh, you want to bet? And they were kind of just joking with me because I wasn't betting. But I mean, if I did and then didn't pay, well, they're probably not calling the cops on me.
Yeah.
So
they,
I have to.
I mean, they have like other ways of dealing with things. And
exactly.
I'm not interested in finding out what those other ways are.
Right. You know, I've seen the way drunk tourists get treated on walking streets. Yeah. You know, mouth off and things like that, you know.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh well, that's crazy. But if you're a drunk tourist and you don't like, you're there to have a good time, and you kind of just be the drunk tourist and don't be the asshole drunk tourist, they tolerate, you know. They this is what we're dealing with. But once you get in the, you know, in the wrong, you're dealt with totally different, and you can look on YouTube and see videos of how that goes down. So
yeah, and so, I mean, it's like that anywhere. Like, you know, you're a drunk asshole in Las Vegas, people are gonna be like, oh, you're a drunk fucking asshole, or
yeah,
you know, and yeah, they're gonna treat you accordingly.
And typically though, in Vegas you're going to the drunk tank. In Thailand you're just gonna be dealt with, and I mean, it's the same type of thing. You're probably just not going to end up in the jail system in Thailand. But you're going to have a pretty similar outcome.
Yeah.
So another thing that's kind of almost mysterious to us in the States, like we were talking about Muay Thai and stadium fighting, is the scoring system.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if I watched, like, Kurt and I went to Raja, we watched our first fights at Raja, and we're like, what the hell's going on in the fifth round? Why the fuck are these guys dancing and slapping hands and just what's going on? So, like, could you shed some light on the grand scheme of Muay Thai scoring in a stadium fights?
Yeah, so I think it's important to understand the fight as a whole. You know, in there's different phases of the fight. So like in backgammon or maybe chess would be a good example because maybe people play chess more. But there's opening moves. Then there's like the mid game where like a lot of the action happens, and then like a closing game. And it's the same with Muay Thai at the stadium. So like the first two rounds, generally the fighters are making these opening moves where they're trying to figure out their positions for the third and fourth round, where all the action and the decisive battle happens. And then in the fifth round, a lot of times there's a, by the fifth round, there's usually a clear winner of some sort. So the fighters will sort of concede to each other because it's, you know, a professional, it's a profession. Mm-hmm. So you don't want to inflict more harm on your body than you wouldn't otherwise need to. And it's a sport. So, you know, in a sport, there's wins and losses. And it's like, well, okay, you know, there's the win is like way out of my reach. It's better if I just conserve myself and prevent any more injuries from happening. And then in terms of the scoring itself during the bout, it's based on like effective striking. So that means, and you can move forward and backwards or side to side, depending on the stadium. Roger Demner in favor is a little more technical. Lumpini likes a little more action. And then balance plays a really big role as well. Like throwdowns and sweeps are very high scoring, along with strikes in the clinch, especially knees right up the middle.
So if I was gonna get like a layman scoring on strikes in Muay Thai, what would my understanding be? As far as like severity or what's scored higher?
Yeah, I mean the best way to look at things is in terms, or the easiest way is to look at people's balance, and like if they're being knocked off balance in any way, that scores. If a blow lands clean and isn't returned, that scores. So for instance, if you kick me, I don't block, and you move me to the side because of the power of your kick, you just scored. If I punch you in the head and your head snaps back, I scored. Most of the time with punches, the head doesn't snap back, so it's ineffective. Okay. If I knee you and I bend your posture down, your balance is sort of fucked up, so I scored heavily. Now, so that's sort of like the balance side. And then in terms of defending and stuff, if you kick me and I kick you back, you know, we cancel each other out. But if you, you know, if you kick me and then I kick you back and then I punch you as well, okay, I got a little bit of a score, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. So basically it's... if you're hit with something, you have to hit back. Yeah, yeah, you have to negate it with the same thing, or if you multiply it, you're winning that exchange. So it's a bunch of small battles throughout the whole fight.
Exactly. And you know, you look at each exchange and it's almost like sort of a race where you're like, okay, I just won that exchange, so I'm a little ahead. Okay, I won the next exchange. Now, like, I'm a little more ahead. I won the next exchange. Now I'm three exchanges ahead. That's pretty far ahead. And then, you know, if you just have to think about that and know all the time where you are in the fight.
Do they score cuts and things like that, or how is that looked at?
Yeah, cuts definitely score, depending on where it is, how bad it is. Because it's considered pretty effective damage.
Yeah.
Sometimes it doesn't score that much. Sometimes it's like, oh wow, like he really fucked him up with that one.
Basically, it would just be they would look at it as being a giant step towards ending the fight.
Yeah, I mean, very, very much. Depending on the location of the cut.
Right. Yeah, and I noticed in Thailand, like they try to preserve the fighters a lot more than we do. For the longevity of a fighter, it's like I spoke to one coach, and he was explaining to me that he doesn't like the way that MMA works because, you know, when they get a knockout, the guy just flops to the ground. The other guy jumps on him and smashes his head in. He said, mm-hmm. If you watch Muay Thai, when our fighters fall, the referee jumps in and will try to grab his head and jumps, throws his body in between the two fighters to make sure there's no unnecessary strikes. He goes, we really care about the fighters and the longevity of the fighter, where you guys in America, you don't care. And you kind of make the sports of combat sports look bad just because you are like animals. And I'm like, I could see that, that look. And we have a lot of fair weather fans also. So it's definitely different than a cultural thing.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Real quick, Matt, one of the things I wanted to ask in regards to scoring is how do they look at forward movement or backwards movement? Is that taken into play at all?
Yeah, so it mainly depends on the stadium and sort of the type of show it is. Mm-hmm. The entertainment shows definitely favor effective forward aggression, so that plays a big part. Some of the main stadium shows, like Roger Dimnern, like I was saying before, it's okay if you're not moving forward as long as you're scoring effectively. Lumpini tends to like a little, slightly more forward movement than Roger Dimnern. But, the big difference is between, the entertainment shows like Max Muay Thai and then the stadium shows. The entertainment shows, they really want people to clash a lot. So they definitely favor the fighters that are moving forward and, throwing out their weapons all the time.
Okay, that makes sense. Say, for instance, in the case of, if you got a really good counter fighter that was moving back but, was creating damage, would that be something that they would prefer or not prefer, I guess, as far as, an entertainment show would go?
Yeah, so there's, there are counter fighters. There's this really, really good guy, Kong Thailand, Kiet Nawi, who is an amazing counter fighter and just super slick. He looks like Samlok Kamsing. He fights regularly at Max. He's a counter fighter, and occasionally he'll get warned for moving backwards, even though he's so slick. The entertainment shows are sort of negating some of the art of counter fighting and stuff. Just one of those things. It's a structural thing.
Okay, cool. I might have to look him up. That sounds
okay. Yeah, I would definitely. He's really good. He's a fighter's fighter. Beautiful skill, slick moves, really unorthodox as well. But he's just an amazing talent.
Awesome. One other thing I wanted to ask real quick, and we kind of covered a lot of it already, but say a young fighter wants to come down to Thailand and they want to fight, what general advice would you give them?
The first one is to do it. not be scared and just like commit to doing it. The second thing is like to try and stick it out as long as you can. Don't, you know, yeah, coming here for a month is good. You know, coming here for 3 months is better. The longer you stay, the more you learn. I think really realistically, you know, spending a year out here is really going to do a lot for your fight career, rather than, you know, making four trips back and forth for 3 months. You know, and like trust in the process. You know, there's been a million fighters. You're just one of them. If you can basically stick it out, something will happen for you.
That's good stuff. Kelly, what you got?
That's about it. I don't want to keep you too long tonight. I know it's, was it midnight for you?
Yeah, it's midnight.
All right. One quick thing. So just for the people that listen, let's get a quick Muay Thai Thai lesson.
Muay Thai lesson.
Yeah. So when they're fighting, what are the refs yelling?
Oh, so the refs will say choke, 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 which is fight, 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 or su, which is fight. You is stop. You stop. Yak is break. Okay. Lum is like begin. So yeah, I think that's most of them.
And then what is
I can think of?
What everyone? It's funny because everyone yells knee, but what yeah. would what is knee in Thai?
So yeah. So like there's cow decal, which is like to strike with their knee, but a lot of times they'll say siap, which is like a knee up the middle. Siap.
Okay.
Which is like a, oh, that's a good scoring knee up the middle.
And the elbow.
Saw.
There you go.
Yeah.
Matt, your social media, any of your websites, anything that you want to shout out?
Yeah, so I have a portfolio page, matt-lucas.com. I keep it relatively updated. My Instagram is mattlucasbkk. I keep that very updated. I am coming out later this month with a ebook on fighting in Thailand, a guide to the sport here in the home country. It's for foreign fighters, coaches, and trainers. It's, you know, it's a lot about the context of the sport, you know, a lot of the things we talked about, but more in depth. So that will be out later this month.
Perfect. Oh, wow. And also Fairtex, Nakmoy Legends, all that stuff. We'll
put
all that.
Oh yeah. Yeah. You can look, you know, you can see me at, you know, Fairtex Training Center on Instagram. Nakmoy Legends is also there. I'm around town.
Yeah, we'll get all those up in the description. And again, okay, I
thank you so much, guys.
I thank you so much, man, for joining us again. I truly appreciate it.
Yeah, no worries. Have a great night, guys.
You too, buddy. Bye. Talk to you later.
All right.
Yeah. All right, bye.
Bye.
Thank you once again for listening to the number one combat sports podcast, the Fight Chase Muay Thai and MMA podcast. You can follow us on Fight Chase on all the social media, YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, all that good stuff. And also, don't forget you can support us at any time going to the anchor.fm/fightchase. Hit the support icon, and you can support us for as little as 99 cents a month. We truly appreciate it. Thank you for listening. And Kurt, don't say boom.
Boom.